Blog Talk Radio.
What started out as a way to get men to basically get together and pull the covers off and start a genuine conversation around love, relationships, and different facets of life have grown into something that maybe at the time I didn't kind of see where it could grow to, but had an idea what it should be. I'm speaking of one black man, thought myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. Jim Reese, Mr. Charles, for the past several years have got together. When we started out doing this, we got together for once to every Sunday for 2 hours and just had deep, meaningful conversations based on those three ideas for the most part. Sometimes I think about it, and it amazes me how long we've been dedicated to just getting together, talking, and opening up and being vulnerable and really sharing some things about our lives, our views, our thoughts. And when you think about it, for me, to get gentlemen to kind of take time out of their daily routine, their schedule, pull away from what they're doing, sit still for 2 hours and maintain a conversation, and deeper than that, open up and expose themselves to different things and go into areas of their psychic that they normally would not maybe want to go into and expose others to, in a sense where they have conversations where they're not sure who's listening and who's judging or thinking, pushed all that aside and brought on and brought forth very strong dialogue. I think that says a lot. That says a lot, and I'm thankful that we had a chance to do that for the amount of time we did it. And not that we're stopping. Some things are going to change a little bit, and we're going to move in a different direction slightly. And we're going to continue on, because realistically, this foundation that we have put together is way too strong, way too secure to put an end to it. But I want to take the time out to thank the two gentlemen that showed up show after show, you know, always brought a strong. I listened to some older shows. Actually, I listened to one of the shows from last year. I think it was the last show of the year. We talked about the show in general, how we felt about it. And it evolved. It evolved. And I look at it this way, in a sense, when the show first came together, when I first got the idea to have us really talk and be honest, be open, be exposed, and the word was be naked, you know, that came from the higher power, God, and place that inside of me. So throughout the time, this show has been moving, whether we paid attention, we said that, we always knew that he was in the forefront, and look where he's guided us, look where he brought us to. Over the years, we have intertwined and said some good things to each other, done some things with each other, and just grown as gentlemen. I like to think that this has been a place that we could have came and kind of expose ourselves, you know, not think about anything else. If we had a rough week, we was able to come here, put that aside, and for whatever period of time we was here, weekly, you know, we were black men just opening up and talking. And I said it numerous times, that sometimes it's hard to get us to just basically talk. You know, we want to give a one-word answer and run, and we were kind of raised to protect our feelings, don't expose ourselves, don't get into much conversation. And we shot all that down here. It's like, no, that's not who we are. And I love the fact that for the folks that tuned in and listened over the years and that attached themselves to us, I think some of that they was attracted to. And when they came on, they didn't hear us, you know, using slang, other stuff that people of our hue tend to try to use to kind of diverse the conversation. There's some real strong talk. And they may not agree with some things that we said, and that's okay. We don't speak for agreement. We speak because we're smart intellectual human beings, and we have conversations. So enough of me going on. I'm going to, you know, bring the two gentlemen in that basically built this empire. But when black men talk, that we're going to kind of modify just a little bit. I'm going to come to Mr. DeMaurice first. And what I want to do, bro, is, you know, welcome you in. Mr. Charles, I'm going to bring you in, too, and I want to go back, because we haven't been together in a while. We ain't been together on this show in about 3 or 4 months. Some things have happened in the past 3, 4 months. And I want to go back and kind of just touch base on something that may have happened in the past 3-4 months that kind of stood out to you. And I'll jump and say this first. A few months ago. And he might not have been a well-known artist, but for me, I grew up, you know, being a big fan of this cat, man. Big fan, listening to his music. And in a way, he kind of set the foundation of my interaction with women. Some of the love songs he sung, when he sung about his heart, wasn't afraid to feel love, lose love, try love again. And when he passed, man, I was like, whoa. You know, I've always over the years listened to his music off and on, and still do. But that was pretty significant to me, that to lose him. Never met the cat, been a big fan, but he was one of those guys when he passed, looked like, I felt like I knew him in a sense and was rocking with him throughout my entire lifetime. So I come to you first, Mr. Demetrius. Welcome back in. And there was something that happened over the summer of the time that we weren't together. If you want to go into, please do so, sir.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think Michael Henderson, I think you're talking about. And, yeah, I it made me think about, I'm going to go into this first thing, going to what you asked. It made me think about years ago, you had like an extra ticket to a Michael Henderson concert, and I was underage. I wasn't supposed to go to the midnight show, but y'all always had me as like a clown. Had me with a big old overcoat, a big old hat brim and stuff, and snuck me into the concert. And we were by the stage, and I could have sworn Michael Henderson kind of did a double take of me, like, what's this kid doing in here in this concert? And so I always felt like, you know, that was kind of like a special moment. And I was jamming just like everybody else because, he, you know, when he got on stage, he didn't hold back. But, yeah, about a lot of people that have been lost, and I'm not talking about just famous people. I'm talking about here in Chicago, where it's just the shooting and folks just losing their lives senselessly here in Chicago. And over the summer, that's been kind of like a thing with me, kind of just sitting back, and I had to sit back for a minute and it forced me to kind of watch a lot of things that were going on and kind of contemplate a lot of things and changes in my life. It wasn't anybody like famous, because we did lose a lot of famous people, but it was like I was more concentrated on, like, you know, or reflecting on people that we lost in the last few years, family members, friends. You know, it really made me kind of sit back and think about what's really important. And then I got to see Pop. You know, I haven't seen Pop since the pandemic. And so we spent the weekend together. And, we hung out, and it was almost like, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't see him for years. And we get together, and it's like we haven't been away for a minute, laughing and talking and us sharing some things. My daughter got married over the summer. So he was in the wedding. I was in the wedding. And, it was a really good time to sit down and just sometimes when I'm in North Carolina, I don't get to have my pop one-on-one. Most of the times I'll stay with him until I can get that one-on-one time. But it was really special to be around him. And he shared some things with me that really kind of opened my eyes to who I am, which was, it was real, real powerful. So I'm going to stop it there because I'll take up the whole show if I keep talking about what happened to me this summer. So.
Yeah. Mr. Charles, I'm bringing you in, man. But I might come back to you on that. You would come back. That's good stuff, man. There's nothing, you know, better than a son-father's relationship. And you're blessed to have your father still available to you, man. You know, I speak to my father in spirit, but you're blessed that you can pick up the phone. You can get down to North Carolina and see him in the flesh. That's awesome. Mr. Charles, what's going on, boss? How you been? How's the summer? Things that happened? What's rolling around with the mind?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I have to say from the beginning, and I'll say this from again over and over, probably till whenever we old and gray, I'm already there. Anyway, I think we all are to a point. Anyway, but... when we first started this idea, I told D. Maurice that I was all about the sports show. Yeah, I didn't want to do that because had done enough of it, and I was just trying to not get involved. I was like, no, I'm not doing that again, because you pull your heart into something and it doesn't keep going, and you go, well, man, what am I doing it for? When I found out that it's for the love, and you have fun with it, you know? And I always said with sports is something I would have talked about or done, you know, because I was used to be an athlete somewhat. I would have done, I would have wrote or talked about for free, man. Seriously, I always said that, but then somebody started paying me. Anyway, but I never envisioned or never thought I would ever engage in a situation like this where we talk about real issues as black men. I mean, we talk about the barbershops and hang out with your boys and intimate situations where you're hanging out doing what you do. But to actually come together with two solid brothers and share real opinions and thoughts and be, as you said, be a naked, for those that know, for others to hear, was like, man, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. And when you first asked about doing it, I was like, all right, I'm going to do it for about a month, and then I'm done. He can find somebody else. I'm doing it because I'm trying to help him out. I ain't doing that. And it kept going and growing, man. And it's not like I have fun. It was a duty. I felt compelled because I really thought that it was something that could help other people. And that's been part of my summer. It's been part of the last couple of years or whatever, even to the point of to D. Maurice, man. Psh, bruh, I'm not going to get emotional with your big head self. But D. Maurice helped me come to a place, man, about writing a book that I never intended to do. But D. Maurice, man, he has such a soothing space, man, and we have a connection that's crazy. You know, we always were cool, but the more and more in these last years I really got to reconnect with my brother, it's been amazing. And I would never trade that for the world. He's a good dude. I just tried to be there. I think we try to bounce off one another, be there for one another, and I think that's real cool. But as I go into this deep soliloquy, let me get off of that, man, because I'll be crying in a minute. I'm sorry, man. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Anyway, I'm on medication, man. Anyway, but real getting back to it. Go ahead.
No, I thought you was done. Please continue.
Yeah, just real quick. Two things, man, thinking about losses. Things that are very important. COVID, man. And I say that because when I think about how it was presented, how we had no clue, including the medical staff and the doctors, and they didn't want to test people unless you were super sick at the time when we first started. Man, people died, man, because they didn't know what the was going on. Straight up. I believe that with all my heart. And we all were scared. I know I was, and I wasn't going to lie. I dealt with bronchitis before, and I dealt with all some viruses. But when you don't, the people that are supposed to know don't know or they don't share, we all were walking on pins and needles, even though we didn't admit it. No, I was. And then there's no people that we have, being aware that people that we knew passed away, man, and more people were dying. And it was real. And it got even more real when people that we knew dealt with it. So, you know, to not have COVID was like, if you never had COVID, it was like, you are the luckiest or one of the most fortunate people in the world, because it's affecting a lot of people. So COVID went a lot of ways in the way that it affected the world. And my last point on this is somebody that passed. I could say Hank Aaron, because I loved him in baseball, Bill Russell. But something brought me back, man, and just because how you grow as a person. The death of Biz Markie, bro, y'all might find that funny or crazy. But when Biz Markie passed, and I love Michael Henderson too, but Biz Markie's passing reminded me how old I was and how far, how long I've been down with hip-hop music, man. Because when I started listening to hip-hop in the late 80s, bro, when it started coming around, hit New York City, Biz Markie was the beatbox for the real Roxanne, bro. After a DJ tried to sabotage the concert she was doing by not showing up, and that brother dropped that Biz Markie beatbox and became an icon. And that let me know I was one of the first people on my block to really love hip-hop. They said it would never last, and it blew up, telling my age. But it just goes to show you, man, that even coming back to the show, that you just never know how things are going to work out, and you never know how you can make a difference. And even when you take things for granted, I think the key for it, I'm learning more and more about myself, is to do things that can help others, and not because you can get paid for it, but just do it because it's the right thing to do.
Wow, my brother. Yeah, that's more than a mouthful right there. Yeah, it's interesting where, like you said, you never know, man. You never know. And even starting this, like I said earlier, who knew the journey we would take, how we would, you know, expose ourselves, who we are, and learn from it, and have others learn from it. I think I said to you gentlemen the other day, I'm amazed where I notice with people, we do our show weekly, and it's posted. It's almost like they don't want that one right now. Listeners kind of basically say, okay, I see it, but I'm going back. I want to go back, and I want to go back and listen. And they go back, and they listen to the old shows, and it's almost like they binge on it. And for me, and I never tripped on how many people are listening, whatever, but it was hard for me not to notice when I saw different parts of the world and the country listening. When I saw, you know, people in Germany listening, people for some reason decided to click in and listen to us three, I knew we were resonating doing something. And I'm not saying it took them to confirm it for me, but I kind of knew, because what happens is when you speak something that's within you, within your heart, and you allow your heart to basically come out in words and verbalize it, it attaches and it finds other souls, man. It just does. It just resonates with other people. And who would have thought, you know, when we did this or started this, that we would be resonating? You know, for the most part, we were just kind of exposing ourselves and just talking. And it's amazing how that's took a life of its own and kind of moved. And as I was saying earlier, we're going to modify some things a little bit. We're going to change the name. You know, we're going to take out When Black Men Talk, and we're going to go to When Men Speak. I remember doing this, and DeMaurice talked, you know, he brought this to my attention a few weeks ago, and I said to him, I want to change the name. He said, well, you know, I had said to you in the beginning about the name, and he was right. I kind of forgot about that, but he was right. But I was adamant about having this show called When Black Men Talk. And the reason why at that time is because I didn't know a place I can go. I wasn't used to having or hearing genuine conversations from black men. Just genuine conversation. I mean, not conversations not based on sex, you know, how she looks, this and that, and all that. That I couldn't click in and go anywhere. And so for me, the word black had to be prominent, not just men talking black, because we speak, even though we speak the English language, we speak a different form of that. Our life, the way we live, our journey, our past allow us to be different. Yes, we're among others, but we are different in a world of our own. We have created that, and we always will create that. So I wanted to do honor to that. So that's part of the reason why the title was When Black Men Talk. Now, as we change to When Black Men Speak, we're still black men, and we're always going to be. We're not running away from that. But I sense that some of the people that are listening, they don't look like us. And I'm grateful that they tuned in and found it, and they're listening. I can't tell you all the people in India are black. I can't tell you people in Poland if they're black. The folks that listen in Canada, I can't say all of them are black. I just can't. Not that I'm taking this way to offend them, but I think as men in general, we all have a certain thing about us that we connect with, that we do. When I tell a story, I say something, it resonates with men of all colors. And that's all we are. We just resonate. So in saying that, I want to kind of nail the focus down a little bit more, because I believe, as Mr. Charles says, you don't know what you're saying could help men. I believe there's other men that can really benefit from what we're doing, love to be part of it, and they might be a little turned off by the name. They might just be a little turned off, but if they can get past that, they can start to focus more on what's going on here. And my thing is, I could be selfish, I could be stubborn, and I could be adamant, no, I'm going to keep the black in there. I'm going to do this. And wait a minute. You know, I don't honestly believe that's what our Creator, my God, wants me to do. Because if he did, he wouldn't have said to me, Mark, it's time to change the name. It's time to move in a different direction. So when he speaks to me, I walk in that speaking. I walk in that feeling. And he allow us to basically work under that heading for years, man, and do some miraculous things, have some awesome conversations, and we will continue. So with that being said, who knows where he's going to bring us? Who knows where we're going to grow to, where we are? But I know one thing, I'm going to work to make whatever he has prepared for us, I'm going to work to see that to come into fruition. That's part of my responsibility, part of my job that I feel I need to do. And I'm glad to have you two basically be there and come along. And we're going to do it, man. We're going to do it. Mr. Demetrius, I'm going to come back to you, man, because you spoke of your father having conversation. But before we hit that, man, I want to go back to the day this happened. And I had a prep talk with you before it happened. Your daughter got married, bro. And I was like, you know, I said a few things to you. I'm not going to repeat what I said to you, so if you don't want to. But, you know, I had to kind of, you know, shake you up a little bit before that day. I know you, man. But I love the fact that after that day, you called back. It's like, man, I'm glad you talked to me. That, man, that did my heart so good. But to have your... What I really want to touch on, and whatever you want to add to it, I'm happy to hear it, bro. How did it feel, man, because my daughter's married. My oldest daughter got married years ago, and I remember that day she got married. And there's something about a dad, man, you know, standing there, because we bring our daughters in the world. We love our sons, but we care for our daughters a little bit more. And, you know, in a sense, like, you know, I remember one time when my daughter was younger, this cat came, she might have been like 15 or 16. This guy came to see her at the door. So my mother opened the door. I hear them talking. It's at my mother's house. I hear them talking, and my daughter walks up to the door. And I'm talking, I'm back and forth. And my mother says something to the guy. And he's like, well, I just came by to see her. I'm like, who this son of a? So I walk up and walk between them. That cat saw me and ran. He stuck around for the conversation. And let's be honest, we've all experienced that at a young age, because there's something about a father, that protection of a father, man, to where now, in a sense, when she's making that move to get married, you're taking down that protection. In actuality, you're giving that to another person, another man. So what did that feel like then?
Well, I've said this a few times to folks who asked me about it. Your daughters are always your princesses. And so, you know, you always try to protect the princess. And I saw my daughter, within that day, from the beginning to the end, turn from a princess to a queen. And so one of my speech to her and her husband, Robert, I think he's a good guy. I like him a lot. I like the way he approached everything as far as wanting to talk to me about his intentions, things of that sort. You don't see that to me too often. And how they kind of did it, they did it as far as meeting as friends and getting to know each other and dating for a number of years and taking their time to do it. And it was just amazing to watch her just be a little princess. You kind of reflect on all the little things from her birth and walking and all this other stuff to this particular point. And she becomes the queen and he becomes the king. And that, you know, they have their own kingdom and queendom. And don't let anybody separate that. Don't even let family members or people that you think are close. And really talking to them about the pitfalls of, you know, the situation, but if they hold on tight to each other and to the creator, they will be fine. But it was just really kind of really special. Had to hold back a lot of tears all that day. You know, it was just really special. And it was something that I wish all fathers really get involved with because it's just an amazing feeling that This little baby you took home and you watch grow up and you're helping in development and all the talks about what her life, she wanted her life to be and all the things she thought it would be. And you know, it just comes to fruition. And it's just a special feeling to just be a part of it. And I felt after talking to him and especially after the wedding that, you know, I'm like, and I told him, I'm putting my daughter in good hands with you. And so the responsibility you have with that and responsibility to, that they have to each other. It's almost like you think that everything that you're teaching your children is going in one ear and out the other. And then you see, you bear witness to them doing exactly what you asked them to do and in a way that they're supposed to do it. So it was very gratifying, man. Very gratifying.
Wow, man. That's amazing right there, boss. But you're right. And that's really kind of the thing about children, man, and being a parent, all that stuff. We're supposed to pass on the knowledge, you know, even not to our kids, you know, as adults, ones that have walked the path and understood and got things we're supposed to pass. And that lacks, as far as I'm concerned, in our community. We don't pull down the wisdom anymore from the elders. We don't, you know, we don't go to them and gain things. We're basically too busy thinking we could do things on our own. We're trying to basically duplicate what we see on television, social media, and all that stuff. But those natural, genuine feelings that we experience is what life's supposed to be about, bro. I remember the guy said, it was a college basketball coach when he had cancer. And they asked him, you know, you could tell he was terminally ill. I know you two know about him. I'm thinking, I can't think of him. I could see him, but I can't think of his name. But they asked, you know, huh? Yes. And you know, they paraphrased, and he said, I lived a full life. He said, I cried, I did this, blah, 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 blah. And that's what life encompasses. You know, sometimes the things that we avoid trying to do, cry, all those things, that's part of who we are, makeup, and make us a full human being. And to experience those things, man, that's living. I mean, we think living is basically riding around and balling. But that's you know, it's funny. My grandma used to say to me, I've heard this, Mr. DeRees. She would say, people living like that, that's their heaven right now. That's their heaven because they've made their heaven here on earth. And that might be the place that they might go elsewhere because that's what they aspire to have. And realistically, we are created to help others, do things for others, inspire others, and uplift others. And what we feel when we get back from that, that's a huge part of living, man. Huge part of living. Mr. Charles, man, I'm going to kind of turn it just a little bit in a sense, but something happened recently, man, and a well-known cat got caught basically having a relationship with someone else. It basically may have cost him a serious position, a job, and he was dating someone or was involved with someone else that we all know and is very popular. I want to get your reaction not to the cheating part, but to what you thought when you came across the story, realize what happened. I want to kind of focus in on, as men, zero on what we think about the man. I mean, we understand how relationships work, relationships started. We understand how men cheat. We won't beat the hell out of that anymore. But I want to go into what does another man think of another man that reaches a position of such, works hard to get to a certain place, and then puts himself in a situation where it's blown up in a matter of months. So when you heard the story, what was your initial reaction about him?
I had a lot of mixed emotions going, brother, to be straightforward. I thought about the situation, as you mentioned, having the opportunity and perhaps just blowing it for an opportunity to whatever he did with said person. Then again, I thought about the man. I'm like, well, hell, how many people have I come across in my lifetime, people that I know personally, that have not perhaps done the same thing, but they've been in positions, and I saw him as a man. And I held it back. I didn't speak to a lot of people about it, but I was kind of conflicted because I understand the right thing to do, and I understand about destroying the opportunity and doing it in front of this large group of people. And I understand about representing your people and setting the example and being the role model. But the other side of me said, I'm not giving you an excuse, but I think what happened here has happened to so many other men, or they had done it or done something to that effect. And I guess what it came down to very quickly is the fact that I realized that no matter what, no one is perfect. And when you throw cast stones at people or whatever, just be careful, because some of us have effed up too. And we're going to mess up. It's not an excuse. I'm just being real. So I know he's going to have to deal with it. He's dealing with it. But before I start to really just throw somebody away, and it's something that, you know, nobody was killed, no children were injured, I had to put it in perspective. And I think that's what I got out of this whole thing. And I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it collectively.
Really do. Mr. DeMarie, same thing to you. I think I sent this to you, gentlemen, when it first happened. And DeMarie, your response about 2 hours later, after kind of still going to have me on the floor, bro. I just had to kind of. I said, that ain't DeMarie. That ain't DeMarie all day, all night. But looking at him, your initial reaction and the thoughts about him.
Yeah, they're going to have to get that response on another show, but I kind of started thinking about there's a tape with Minister Louis Farrakhan when he says when great men fall, don't laugh, you know, learn. And so he's been in he's probably in that position, and there've been many men in that same position of power, things of that sort, who have, you know, dated people, not to justify it or anything, but have had those affairs at work, things of that sort. These things happen. People are human beings. And not get caught, or maybe kind of figure out the right way to do the wrong thing. So you kind of feel bad for him. I kind of feel bad for us, because the brother was doing a really great job at Boston. I mean, he took them farther than they've been in 12 years or so. And you hate for that to happen to a brother, or you kind of fall into the stereotypes of being, these sexual monsters and all that. Can't help ourselves. I'm confused by the story, because they keep saying it's consensual, but if it's consensual, does the Boston Celtics have a certain policy where there's absolutely no room to do that at all? So, I guess we'll learn a lot about that later. But I just feel bad for the brother. I feel bad for the whole situation. I feel bad for, his fiance. This is very public. It's not like it's kept under a rug somewhere, or it's just a few people know about it. And the thing that bothered me the most is in our sports show, we talked about Brett Favre. Brett Favre is getting no play on the airways as far as what he's done, which I think is far worse than what this brother's done. But this brother's being blasted on TV, and he's going to probably be the poster boy of sexual harassment and all this other stuff. And I just want to learn from it at this particular point. Learn from it, because, hell, if Adam, in the Bible couldn't resist, and David and all these other great men that we read about in biblical times and throughout our whole history, if they weren't strong enough to resist temptation, then it can get any of us. So at first, you kind of get the shock value and you kind of respond in certain ways. But after things kind of calmed down for me in a couple of days, it's like, you need to learn from this, that don't let power corrupt you or make you so drunk that you start making mistakes.
There it is, man. There it is. Mr. Charles spoke COVID earlier, the pandemic of the COVID, and he said people that we thought knew how to handle it had no idea. And for me, we all looked at the pandemic in different views and different eyes and different things. And I've said this before. I thought the pandemic was a correction for us. I just thought it gave us a chance to kind of sit back in many facets of our life and look at things, how we could do things differently. I'm amazed how many people basically ran around, didn't know how to teach their kids, and I'm not a teacher. You're a teacher, your kid's first teacher. But that being said, I think, too, it gave us a chance to kind of look at some things that we're doing that we're going to be better at. And I like the way you two went about that with him. And sometimes, you know, as men, we've done things in the past we got away with, but that doesn't make it right. And sometimes we got to look at those things that we know we did was incorrect, and we got to modify and do better. And sometimes we refuse to because getting away with it, we think, okay, you know, I got this. I can handle it. I can manage this. But just because you got away with it didn't mean it wouldn't have great damage to others and yourself. And those are things we have to kind of try to avoid as we walk this life, this journey, especially as we age and we should know better. And that's not putting the young man down, like you said, Mr. Reese. That desire, that urge is always going to be there, man. And as men, we have to fight it strongly because we're made to hunt. We're made to seek out, not for our desires, but to procreate. It's that strong feeling. And it's interesting where a woman gets to a certain age, she can no longer have children, bear children, but that urge don't leave us. That urge is still there to basically procreate and go out, and it drives us. And to me, that's one of the biggest battles and conflicts that we're going to have as men. Some give into it. Some basically find a way to ride it better. Some I look at sometimes, and from this I want to just pull from this, is that we have to be consciously aware. We should be consciously aware our decisions that we make, who can affect more just than us. And as you said, Mr. Reese, you know, it's going to always be there for them. She has to basically bear this. I think she's done an awesome job handling this because I know people have probably been there. Yeah, you need to do X, Y, Z. And it seems like she's taking her time to kind of work herself through it. And I admire that. And sometimes we can always basically make the initial jump, and that initial jump may be wrong. But there's been time, feelings, emotion invested with this man, and she's walking through that. And I don't look at him in a bad way. I mean, I wish he would have made some better choices. And the Celtics basically had a policy that this cannot happen. You can't carry on consensual or non-consensual. And it's based on where things have went with sexual harassment, in a sense. Now, if I understand correctly, what brought this to the forefront of the Boston Celtics is that I guess she decided to no longer continue on. And he made some comments to her that she felt was unwarranted. So once they happen, now that comes to their attention. And what they're trying to do is escape all liability. They don't want somebody to come back later on trying to sue them for money. So they put this in your clause, you know, this you can't do. Because they're looking down the road what could potentially happen. And anytime that you have work romances and stuff like that, when things don't work out, there's always that possibility of the aftermath, what could happen. And a lot of these corporations don't want to deal with that anymore. And, you know, we have to look at sometimes, okay, if we're with someone, that we care about, we did all the preparation to make this person feel that we'll hold to them, as a man I'm speaking now, then why are we going back and being with someone else? Why are we giving our emotions to someone else? And don't get me wrong, black men beat their chest about the side chick, blah, 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 and all this other stuff. My point is, if you got to have a side chick and your main chick ain't doing the right thing, you need to get rid of the main chick. Screw a side chick. I mean, you try to get your main chick to be the main chick and be what she got to be, but this premise that the side chick has to exist because my main chick, bruh, here again, that's the part of the correction that I think as men we need to start to think about. Now, if you just want to have chicks, I'm okay with that. I'm not going to lie. I'm okay. But the side chick ramification, what it does and what it creates for you, her for others, your children, or everything else, man, it runs long and it runs deep. And I know as men, we're not thinking about that as we're trying to basically fulfill the sensation that we honestly carry and we have. We're not. But I always felt for me, it's better to be straight up and be upfront and say, this is what this is, and this is how I'm going to handle it. So my thing is, I don't want to kind of mislead or move someone in a different direction thinking that's, I'm showing you this, but I'm doing that, because I want to be honest about it. And if I can't simply just be with you, no matter how beautiful you are, whatever the case may be, and I know I'm going to be over here from time to time or whatever the case may be, I'd rather you have an idea, you know. So you can't come to me later, and if you can't deal with that, I understand. And more or less, take accountability for your desires. And I know it's easier to sneak around, and it has some euphoric to it. Don't get me wrong. Cheating has some euphoric to it, and it makes you feel a certain way, like you're managing, you're jungling. But at the same time, there's some ramifications to it, and there's a lot of stress that goes with it. And sometimes, you know, we look at men and we say, oh, they die earlier. Part of the reason why. Because we're trying to juggle and do all this stuff. And if your true nature as a man is to just do what you want to do, do what you want to do, bro. Don't worry about what they're saying about you on the outside. If that's what you want, that's what you want. But that just know your choices have ramifications, not only for you and for others. And when those ramifications are put in front of people on a broad scale, now I personally don't think that organization is going to bring it back into the fold. I don't think they're ready to tell him now he's terminated. But I think I just don't see them bringing him back. I think that if that's their policy, he violated. I think at this point they don't trust him. Good guy, good coach. And that's got to be a huge thing, man. They don't trust you because at the end of the day, is he going to cost us money? That's what when you go into those board meetings and you talk to your lawyers, it comes down to, you know, what's going to cost us. And if he could be replaced and don't trust him, because they're going to look at it like this. He stood there knowingly and signed off on this and then went behind their backs and chose to do such. How could you trust that? We got a little bit of time left. I'm sorry, if you want to say something, I got a little long there. If you want to respond,
yeah,
to that, feel free.
Because there was also a story that came out about a coach that I guess been dating cheerleaders on another team, but I guess they don't. All teams don't have that same policy.
Yeah, some people adopt it after what's been going on in the current climate. What's been going on? You see a lot of people. You see these people on television. You know, they go back and they're trying to minimize litigation. They're trying to minimize. You know, some teams are some teams. I think you're going to see more teams moving that direction. More organizations. I know the company I work for, man, they sat us down last year and made us, you know, do they brought in a sexual harassment attorney and taught us for 3 hours. This will be, this won't be. This retaliate, this won't be. Because they want to make sure they're not paying any more money out. You know, they want to make sure that, you know, they're protecting their solid financial base and they're not willing to pay out these millions anymore because you're acting stupid. No, we're just going to get rid of you and cut you off. It's like a limb. They're going to cut you off and move you out the way. I want to go with this one in a sense because even with that, I look at her, and I said earlier how she's handling things and dealing with things. And, Mr. Charles, if we can't put ourselves in that situation, well, the roles will reverse. You know, that was someone, that was your fiance, and you realize she was out there and on the grand scale came out having an affair with someone else or being intimate with someone else. You know, what when it comes to you this way, how you handle it? What do you think your reaction would be? Now, as a man, she's the woman. We're just going to flip it. We're going to flip the pancake. Cook this side just a little bit. Your reaction, how you think you would internalize that, sir?
I would need to really gather my thoughts because, of course, the first thing initially is I would be pissed, right? And I think it makes it even worse from what I'm seeing. The way that it's magnified because it's in the spotlight, right? And the way it's so magnified. And not saying it would be any better if it was not, it didn't have as much shine on it, but it does. And it's even worse. So when you sign on, and when she signed on with this gentleman and this guy, and he had this platform, and that just makes it, I think it even make it even worse as a man. To be straight up with you, though, especially, you know, they've been rolling like this for a while. I don't know, man. I know people like, well, you ain't supposed to give up, bro. But, I mean, if you do it now, you're going to keep doing it, right? If I'm married to you, it might be a little different. But we ain't even married. We've been hanging for a while. I don't know. We have to have a serious conversation. I'll probably be on the edge of saying, you know, the hell with it, bro. I would probably be on that edge. But then again, like I said, it would take. I'm just keeping it real, bro. I mean, what? Shit, you going to see before we end? What you going to do? What you going to do? What are you going to do once we – why are we getting married? We might just keep kicking it. That'd be the other thing. Real quick. I get out this very quickly. If that happened away from me like that, I'm like, we can still hang out. I don't know if we're going to be fiancé. You want to keep kicking it. Evidently, you like to be hanging out with other people. Then they know you start getting married. Such at this age? Hell no. Nah. Anyway, I need to bring that back in. Let me bring that back in. Because why are we getting married? We might just keep kicking it. You have somebody, you doing what you're doing? Why are we getting married? We can be whatever, but there's no need to be married. We just keep it here. That's what you want to do and see what happens.
My man, Mr. Charles, I love, man. Excuse me for laughing if I threw you off, but I laugh because you know where you are with this, but then you give a little bit to this part of the issue. Then you go back. Nah, I need to give a little bit back. It's like and I hear you. You know, it's going to be tough for you, brother. At the same time, you want to hold on. Maybe no. Because you're thinking, what I hear is you're thinking. You're right,
man. The mind says one thing, and the heart says another, bro.
Exactly. And it may not be well documented, but for another man to violate sexual women that you love and care, that's some tough stuff to get over with. It just is. I mean, it's like basically. When a woman does that to a man, and women have accepted it, and I'm not sure how they can fully. I know they love us to an extent, and they'll try to work around it and get over it. But for a man to know that another man has been placing himself inside of the woman that he cares about, that's like putting a foot, that's like opening his chest up, putting a foot in there, and just keep kicking his chest. Bang, bang, bang. Because the mental, it's not even... the mental thing that's going to screw his head up constantly over and over and over and over and over again is what he's not wanting to deal with. He may not say it, but that's what it is. And it's like there's the trust issues, all that is true and it's prominent. Don't get me wrong. But for a man to know the woman that he's been with, he's cared for, that he's been inside, but he has enjoyed, feel a certain way, it's hard for most men to come back from that. It's just hard. You know, and that's something that most men ain't going to talk about. They better drink a pound of whiskey to own up and be honest about that. But that's big. That's a big part of it, a huge part of it. Mr. DeMaurice, same thing. It was flipped. You know, you're the one here, and she's him. You know, how are you handling, how you're internalizing, how you're dealing with it?
First thing I do is go to the best strip club I can find, and I'll be like Holly Berry at the strip club with a room full of women talk about, make me feel better. Make me feel better.
Do
tell
something
my
to
side
make
story.
Me feel good.
Yeah. Tell my side story so I get all the love, like they feel sorry for me and all that other stuff. And then after my three-day weekend of debauchery, that'll be a deal breaker for me. Like, no, I can't do it. I'm a free agent now. And you're right about how men's egos are. We got very fragile egos. And so if we feel like this is our woman and somebody else has felt the same thing on a part-time basis, you just don't tolerate that really well. So that would be a deal breaker. I probably wouldn't do it public, and I haven't heard her say anything about it. I'll do it private, just move on. And, you know, it wasn't meant to be. And you know, I guess time heals all, and just try to heal up from that. But, yeah, my first move would be a strip club, baby. I'm free. And I can stay here and spend as much money and drink as much as I can. Just make me feel better. Because, somebody did me wrong. And they specialize in making people feel good after somebody did you wrong. So, but yeah, after that, you just have to come back to reality and say, you know what, this didn't work out. And she probably already knew. Like, sometimes when you're in those relationships, you already know that something's different, something's changed. So this is probably confirmation that, you know, it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I would hear all that. I think for me, I would have to really step away for a period of time. Step away, and it would be easy for me to initially go, you know what, you know, I'm going to cut the snake heads off and just kind of like leave it there. I would have to step away for a period of time and really give it a chance. And the reason why I say such is because I know in my life I have not been perfect. I know I'm not in my life. I understand how evil, how sin and all that places anyone. It could be manipulate anyone and bring anyone into a weak state. And I would try not to state that, overrun that. And that would give me a chance to kind of pull back and kind of surf that through. I mean, kind of sink that through and think about it and then make my decision. And at that point, I'll determine based on how I want to move forward. Because if I'm fully invested, and I know it's going to sound strange to some people, but if I'm fully emotionally and in love invested in you, I believe that's what I should do. I should pull back and give it a chance to breathe and try to understand it and then make my decision. Now, if I decide to walk away, I want to be clear about it and know, okay, I'm walking away because this is what I feel and it can go forward. If I decide to stay, I have to understand what the task I'm taking on, what's going to entail, and what I need to move forward. And in that sense, thinking that act shouldn't basically eradicate what we've grown, what we experienced, what we felt. And I know it may sound different, but I've kind of always felt that in my head. I've always did. Because I think it's so fast to jump up and run. I remember years ago, you know, on Oprah, she said this, and I always thought it was funny. She said, you know, I've had women come up in this show for many times. If he does this, blah, 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 I'm leaving. She said, guess what? You all didn't leave. You talked about it, but you didn't go anywhere. You're still there. And at the end of the day, you know, I think they have dealt with it much more than we have. They have dealt with that pain. They have dealt with the hurt, the embarrassment, and all of it, the shame, you know, the mental side of what they're thinking, the same thing we're thinking. They have found a way. Women have found a way to handle it and still be there. Sometimes they're a detriment because, like Mr. Charles says, if you've done it, you know, they did it one time, they're not going to repeat it and do it again. And they have dealt it with on multiple occasions. And I'm not saying it's trying to even the score, but if you think about why they may have chose to, it's because they cared about the person. They cared about what was built there. And I could assume now with her, you know, they have a child together. And she's looking at, you know, what, you know, if I move away from this, and she probably wants to be sure, either way, stay or stay there. But she has to kind of work her way through it. And that I commend her for. Maybe we got a few minutes left. I get some quick questions. A question for you, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, my question is, considering this new show idea, how do you think it might be different in the perspective that we move forward with?
Considering, I said it one more time.
I said considering the different, the name change, how do you think that the show will grow or the different perspective that may be seen in what we're presenting as a whole?
We're going to keep the same foundation of, you know, the you know, I think anything more, it's going to be embraced a little different. I think we're going to push the mat. And I always said that honest self-evaluation, I want us to look in the mirror constantly, always. And I think if anything, that people that maybe start to find this show are going to realize, if you're going to listen to this, you're going to be doing the same thing. You're going to look in the mirror. You're going to honestly look in the mirror. And that's what's going to kind of force you to do as men. If you ain't about that, if you're too weak to do that, then damn it, this show ain't for you. You know, so it's going to be basically look in the mirror. This is what you see. Okay, do you like what you see? Cool. If you don't like it, damn it, do something about it. You know, and that's it. Because sometimes we feel like, you know, our pain, our thoughts are our own, but they're not. They're shared. You're responsible, Mr. DeMaurice, if you want to come in on this, boss.
Yeah, well, I know we talked about this weeks ago, and it seems to be that it's going to be more inclusive of just not men of color, but what we have in common with men of all walks of life. So I would really kind of like that, because I talk to a lot of different men from different cultures, and we all go through the same thing, man. It's like we've been being duped for years. So we sit down and we talk and we kind of chop it up like, yeah, I go through that too. And it's like, yeah. We got a lot more in common than we do, in contrast. So I think it would be good to include some of the things that we don't see in other cultures and other different men that don't look like us. Because I guarantee you, I've talked to many of my peers of different cultures and races, and they're like, man, you see them the same face, the same shaking their head about certain things. You sit down. I remember a couple of my dudes kind of cornered me one night and talking about their wives and why they do this and why they do that. And so it was like we were out after our training about an hour later, just standing out there talking about, stuff that, we've talked about on the show and things of that sort. So I think it'd be really fun to see what other people think about what we talk about. And if it's for you, it's for you. If it's not, it's just not. We're cool.
Your response. Your response, Mr. Charles. You got about a minute, bro. Take your minute and use it wisely.
No doubt. Real quick, I think that so many differences that we have as far as cultures are concerned, you guys hit it right on the point. We're so similar as men. We go through some of the same things, and we realize that if you take enough time, you actually can find people that may not look exactly like you, but go through some of the same things, and we might be able to connect with others on a general basis, just as men. I think at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, because no matter what you come from, what your background may be, sometimes you're like, man, I can't believe this BS happened. And we all have felt that as men. I leave it there.
I love it, gentlemen. I love it. And that sets it up real well. We kind of basically put the tie on when black men talk, and we open the door to when men speak. Soon come at you. Keep listening out for it. We appreciate you all always giving us an ear, paying attention, but we're going to continue to make this happen. We're going to make it happen strong. You all enjoy the day, and we'll be doing this soon. Love you both, man. Y'all go easy.
All right.
Thanks for the snack. I left you living like a talk. You said it was just a shack. I gave you seven children, and now you wanna give them back.